Hello, everyone. My name is Greg Windsor, and I'm from the Johnson County Library. And with me is...
Christine Peterson, Johnson County Library.
And this week, we've come together to talk about a new type of genre. Last time we met, we talked about the historical fiction genre, and we both liked the Bernard Cornwell. This one, I decided to go in a completely different direction, and hopefully this is an interesting discussion because of it. We're going to be talking about George Pelecanos, who's an author out of who writes out of Washington, D.C., and he writes kind of thrillers and city noirs. He's written on the HBO series The Wire and has had several best-selling books. This one came out several years ago. It's called The Turnaround, and it marks a kind of a turnaround in style for Mr. Pelecanos, and I thought this would be a nice topic to talk about. So, Christine, I'm the one who kind of suggested we read this one, so I had some familiarity with it. For you, coming to this new, fresh, what did you think about the book?
This was a very hard-hitting urban parable for me. It's not a genre that I would, or a type of fiction that I would probably just pass by the shelf and pick up. It was very interesting. It was a little complicating for me to handle some of the issues because the issues are very true to life. They're very real. But I found it very, very interesting. The characters were very, very well developed in this book, and it does center around a masculine character building that he does, more masculine.
I would agree, and before we get into the book itself, I wouldn't say weaknesses, but I guess one of the holes in George Pelecanos' writing is that he does often deal with men and with masculine issues, and that's not to say he leaves out females entirely. There are several female characters in the book, that are instrumental to the novel, but really that's where his focus is, about kind of... And not like in a kind of a macho type of a thing, but in how society looks at and how culture looks at masculinity. What's it like for an inner city African-American teen to be masculine, to be real? Mm-hmm. What is it like for a middle class, white working person to be, to be masculine, to be a good father, a good caregiver? How does that square with a lot of society's and entertainment's way of how to be masculine, these are interesting issues, and he handles them very well.
He does. I agree with you, Greg. I don't believe that he's taking on kind of a macho air, because you don't see the development of the female characters, but you see the support that they give to those masculine characters. You see the strong marriages and how the mothers have a strong role in the young men's lives, and the absent mothers who have a very weak role in the characters who do not come out such a good thing.
Too well, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
The book itself centers around, I guess, two groups of young men. The book takes place in two different time periods. There's the meat of the book takes place in present day, circa 2008.
Yes.
It's in Washington, D.C. And the first part of the book deals with kind of how these characters were kind of young, kind of maybe in the 17, 18, 19 years old, back in 1972. And this is Washington, D.C. had just come out of an era of, Dr. King had been assassinated a few years earlier.
Oh, yeah, just very few years after.
Yeah, and it's very,
Bill of Rights.
A very racially charged place. And this in this Washington, D.C. neighborhood, this is not where the politicians hang out. It's a very kind of a working class, white section. And then you have some kind of lower or working class black sections of town. And they don't really mix that well. These neighborhoods are very clearly defined. And it's very kind of normal to not cross these specific boundaries of where you've kind of grown up and where you work and these types of things. And the turnaround, the conflict happens when a group of white teens, three teens, get into a car and they go over to the black section of town and they shout some racial slurs out the window to a group of blacks standing on the corner.
And throw a cherry pie.
And they speed off laughing. The problem is, as they speed off, they realize they've hit a dead end, and they have to turn around and come back to and face the people that they just did this to again. And and what happens was is that well, Christina, you can tell us what happened.
Well, one of the young men who was probably from a more affluent family, he got out of the car right away and he ran away.
Mm-hmm.
And then the driver of the car, Billy, it was his father's car that he was driving, and he felt responsible for what was taking place.
He was the one who actually threw the cherry pie and said the words, right?
And so he got out, he stopped the car facing these three black gentlemen, and he said, you know, come on, I'm sorry. But they end up beating on him, and the guy in the backseat who's one of the main characters, Alex, he is in the back seat and does nothing. He gets out of the car, and Billy tells him to run away, and at that point, he ends up getting beaten up to the point where he is physically deformed. His eye, he's not blind in the eye, but he's got all these scars. And, of course, one of the black guys pulls his gun and shoots Billy and kills him. So now we have a murder.
Yes, and then the way Pelicano sets this incident up, he says you get the point of view of the three African-American teenagers. Two of them are brothers.
That's right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You have Monroe, who's the, or the Monroe
brothers. They're both
brothers.
Monroe brothers.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Raymond
and James.
Raymond and James. Raymond is the younger brother, and he's kind of the, he's young. He's kind of looking to kind of how to fit in society. He's kind of looking to kind of run with kind of a dangerous crowd because he's young and he idolizes his
very
older brother.
Impressionable.
His older brother, James, is much more the solid foundation of the two and is the one who's kind of responsible. And then their childhood or their neighborhood friend, Charles Baker, who's kind of a...
He's wild.
He's not a good character, and he's not a good influence. And he's the one that that really wants to push Raymond in kind of a bad direction.
Yeah, because he preys on the young.
Yes,
he wants to impress those younger guys.
Yes, and so you get their point of view, and then you get Alex's point of view, and the passenger in the back of the seat. After the incident happens, you flash forward into present day and find out kind of what the characters are up to now. And the catalyst of the story of all of this kind of reappearing and kind of going back up again is Alex is now managing his father's shop, his mother,
mm-hmm.
father's coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't able to go to college because he had to kind of, his father had medical problems, so he never got to be, he never got to go off to college and kind of pursue his dreams. He had to kind of be the one to stay home and to kind of keep the family going. And
he wanted to be a writer.
He wanted to be a writer, and but he ended up kind of supporting his younger brother, who as he grew up and got married, one of his children went off to war and died in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes by the Walter Reed Medical Center in Washington, D.C. to give away pies, you know, left over from his shop to the soldiers and the people who volunteer there.
His younger brother also was killed.
Yes,
Vietnam, I believe.
Yes.
So his younger brother was killed, and then one of his sons was killed.
Yes.
So he makes a connection with the veterans there,
mm-hmm.
at the Veterans Hospital.
And ultimately, and then of course, the other side of that equation, the younger brother, you find out what happens to the Monroe brothers. One of them is in jail, and the other one has gone to jail.
For the murder.
For the murder. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is turned out to be a physical therapist who his
Raymond,
son...
Raymond, the youngest.
Raymond, yes, mm-hmm. whose son is in Iraq, who's,
mm-hmm.
you know, still out there. So he works, and he's moved to Walter Reed to work with these veterans. So one day they just happen to pass each other, you know, just
mm-hmm.
passing each other. Raymond sees him, sees the scarring on the eye, and makes that connections. And that kind of what kicks the plot into motion,
mm-hmm.
of... how did this just traumatic, horrible incident that happened 35 years ago, if you see that person again and have an opportunity to make that connection, what do you do? Are you the same person that you were, you know, the 35 years ago? These are different men.
Mm-hmm.
And these are men who have families and have made connections. And then some of these men are still paying for their decisions.
Oh, yeah, there is no closure yet.
There is
no
closure
at all for any of them. Because
so.
Charles Baker is in and out of prison,
mm-hmm.
still continues to prey on the young or
mm-hmm.
try to influence others to do his bidding.
Mm-hmm.
And even James, when he gets out of prison, Charles Baker is at his door wanting him to go in on some kind of a scheme
yes.
that is illegal.
So James is the older brother, who is originally the one that tried to keep his younger brother straight, ended up going into prison and kind of assuming that kind of mantle of the irresponsible one, whereas the younger one, Raymond, kind of went on to have more of a straight, I guess, life. And Raymond, as the younger brother, is the one who's trying to kind of heal it and make it all better. And so when he sees Alex, he tries to establish that connection. At the same time, Charles, the predator of the one, he's at a prison. He's looking to make money, so he's looking to wedge his way into a pot dealing ring locally, so he can get some influence, get some money, and he's going to try to come to Alex to say, you know, I know what you were a part of this 35 years ago.
Yeah, extortion.
I want money.
Yeah,
yeah. And so to make this go away, or else I can smear your name and I threaten your family. So,
but what also threads throughout this book, Greg, is the author continues to go back and let us know about the families where these guys came from. The Monroe brothers come from a very strong, their father was a bus driver, hardworking. Their mother was,
she's a domestic, and
she's still alive in the book. And,
mm-hmm.
and she says, I married a good one, because she knew that she had a good, solid marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that had an effect on the choices that they later on make in their lives. It goes over the fact that Alex Pappas, that's his name.
Mm-hmm.
He is Greek descent, and his family also was very solid, and his father held him to be responsible. So you can see where that wholesome upbringing affected him and how it affected him. Now, then there is the young man who ran away from the incident when it happened. He comes from an affluent family to where he feels like no big deal, money can buy anything. And as the author says, he is quote unquote still running away, because it's like he's oblivious to the lower, those who are beneath him. He
mm-hmm.
is superior.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the author does make mention, it was very candid about Charles Baker and how he was raised and the abuse he suffered, the physical abuse he suffered from his stepfather or the boyfriend of his mother.
Absolutely.
The absence
even though,
of his mother.
Even though if there is a, there is, yeah, Charles Baker is very much an evil presence in this book, but it's not like a comic book type of evil. He was made this way. And there was, even though one of the points of the book is that no matter where you were at in life, you know, you can choose how you react to situations. And Charles Baker uses the events in his life to kind of justify his actions,
mm-hmm.
and continues the cycle of poor decision making. And you know, there's a scene, you know, where he's going to extort one of the other characters, and he looks at himself in the mirror, and he's got, like, he went to the Salvation Army and got this suit, and so he's trying to make this hype. And so he's thinking of himself as he's really put together, and then when he goes to actually to the affluent white neighborhood to meet, you know, this other character, he realizes, he sees himself in the mirror, and he sees himself through the lens of everyone else, and he realizes that he does look completely out of place, and that there's his years of in prison and the decisions he's made, he's no longer he's not of this world, and he can only see things in terms of predators and prey. And that's
mm-hmm.
the only way that he can view the world. And even though it doesn't make him, I guess it doesn't make him sympathetic, but at least you kind of see things through his point of view. He's
mm-hmm.
not, again, he's not a cartoon evil character. You kind of, you see things through his point of view. And that's important to know, even though he's not somebody you'd want to meet by any means. At least you kind of understand how he got there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you do feel sorry for him.
That's true. And he influences this one young man who is white, ethnic, and that young man comes to a sad end. But then he's also trying to influence the son of his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was rather bold of him, the young man, to join the army and go and tell his mom that they were getting out of there. And he turns the door another way, and they are out of that picture.
For example, when you're talking about making choices, this character is Dion. He's kind of he's 18, he's just graduated high school,
mm-hmm.
he has no prospects, suffers from depression, and he self-medicates
with
marijuana and antidepressants. And he works at a kind of a retail shoe store to kind of, you know, try to get coolness, and he starts dealing marijuana to kind of get some sort of income going. But he's not on a track to anywhere. He's not moving toward anything. He's just kind of perpetually staying in place. And when he starts falling under the influence of Baker, or as Baker tries to prey on him, he has a choice to make, and ultimately he struggles with it. But ultimately, he chooses not to go that route. He kind of goes. He does go off and join the military, and even though he has all the excuses in the world to make that bad choice, just like Charles had all those excuses in his life that he could make that, he chose not to do that. He made a better choice, and it was a nice counterpoint to the character of Charles, who just does not make does not make the good choices.
He doesn't. Now tell me, is this a type of genre that you enjoy reading?
I'm guilty of it. I do. this George Balakonos is probably one of my favorite writers. He writes I call them urban operas. They're just kind of usually these kind of thrillers or crime kind of thrillers that are set in usually urban settings. That aren't just about crime. They're about larger things, and they usually a crime kind of sets these things in motion. But ultimately, it's about more than just the plot, and that's why I kind of like them. And they don't necessarily have to be urban. Somebody who's very similar to him is Dennis Lehane, who's written Mystic River, which was made into an excellent movie.
Oh, that's right.
As well as Gone Baby Gone and The Town, which have also been adapted into movies.
Two movies. I've seen Gone Baby Gone.
Yes, and again, that kind of deals with social issues with a crime, a kidnapping at the central, but it ultimately is about more than that. Also, another book I read recently is called Visitation Street by Ivy Pakoda. It's a debut novel, and she writes about the Red Hook section of Brooklyn, New York.
Wow.
Which used to be a kind of a working class sea, like a coastal kind of seafaring town that fell victim to drugs and during the 70s and 80s and is now trying to scratch its way back to respectability. But all those old ghosts of, you know, racial prejudice and class are still there. So when two girls go missing and one of them is found with no memory of what happened and one of them still missing, that kind of riles up all these ghosts and all these characters that are in the neighborhood, and that's kind of kicks the plot into motion, and you get to live in with this variety of characters and get to see trust me, when you read this book, you smell the salt of the sea, you feel the heat rising up from the asphalt. She sets that setting so well. And also another one I read is called Crooked Letter by Tom Franklin, and it's in this genre, but it's not city. It takes place in rural Mississippi, where two childhood friends, one black and one white, they have this the incident that kind of binds them together as kind of oddball friends, and then the life separates the two, and then years later they're thrust back together again from the results of a crime that cast the white friend in shadow of guilt, even though he was never convicted. The shadow of guilt hung over him, so he became ostracized from his community. Mm-hmm. And his African-American friend grows up and becomes a kind of a deputy in that small community, and another murder happens, and so who's the first person who gets looked at is his old friend. And it dredges up all those ghosts from the past. And it's really just a great setting for a story that's about this, that's about the connections that you make when you're younger, and the decision you can make when you're younger, and then as you become an adult, you know, when life kind of makes you into a different person, how can you react to that? How do you come back and look at these decisions?
Pretty much like this, The Turnaround.
Very similar in tone, and yeah. Unlike those types of books. Now, have you ever read anything that's similar to this, or is this completely new?
No, nothing. I did some study on the author, on Pelicanos, and it was interesting. He is from D.C.
Mm-hmm.
He is Greek. Does a lot of parallels with this Alex Pappas character.
Yes.
Because
yes.
His father did own a cafe,
mm-hmm.
and Alex wanted to be a writer. And he is a writer. Pelicanos is a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw some of those parallels.
Yeah.
And he, of course, has lived in this urban area, so he's pretty much familiar with the entire smell.
Absolutely. He mentions one thing Pelecanos does in his novels. It's not like a person drives down a street in a car and lights a cigarette. He will tell you what street it is. He will tell you what make of car it is. And he will tell you the brand of cigarette the person is lighting. He will tell you what's playing on the stereo.
On the radio,
Music is a huge part of this.
Yes, I was going to say that too. Because the music evolves, of course, to the present day. And these main characters are even in conflict with the music. I thought that that was interesting, how they had to have a certain kind of music to actually influence them to do what they wanted to do.
Yes.
And we see that in Cody also with his iPod.
Yes.
And he needs his gizmo so he can go and deliver his stashes.
Which is a crucial plot point.
Yeah.
Another thing I noticed, I'm a sports fan. And a lot of times the way guys communicate with each other is through talking about, you know, the sports. And about in Washington, D.C., there's the Bullets. The characters are big into basketball. And so a major plot point involves how brothers or how friends talk about sports. And that rhythm in the conversation, Pelecanos does that so well. I'm talking about sports with my best friend. You know, the old arguments you have with your friends, the types of things you've discussed, you know, and you've had arguments about 20 years ago that is now part of your relationship, and the in jokes and all those type of things. Pelecanos just nails that, and he really writes dialogue just so true to the characters. You can actually, again, you know, hear these characters talk.
And it plays an important part when certain facts of this story are revealed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was interesting how Alex was even attuned to some of the favorite sports figures that the Monroe brothers enjoyed.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting when the author writes out, it says, I think Alex is saying, you know how we idolize these sports figures, and then we like to go out and play like we are them. It just reminded me of my own boys, because that's how they were. Baseball and basketball and football and whatever. They were out there in the yard being
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan, LA Lakers, whatever his name is, or Kareem or whatever.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Kobe Bryant. Yeah.
Even Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
You're like, whoa.
Absolutely.
But it is. It really does. Like, little girls play with dolls and imagine their little home world.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a key factor.
And it goes back to that theme of masculinity.
Yes.
Of boys, you know, idolizing these kind of grown-up players in the fantasy that they do. And I thought it was telling that Alex's son, Gus, who went off to become a soldier and died, he started playing football. And
yes.
So he played Pop Warner, and even though he wasn't tall enough or fast enough to be a good college player, that was always his dream to play football.
Right.
And so it was kind of interesting that the one who's kind of fantasizing about a fictional type of manhood couldn't make it, whereas his other brother, who's a restaurateur and a chef, and thinks more of a practical way of making a living.
Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny. So, yeah, there's lots of ways that the author kind of looks at this.
It was very, very interesting. And like I said at the beginning, it was very true to life for me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe sometimes those are things I don't like to look at face. I know that while I was reading this book, if it would be made into a movie, it would be one of those violent rated R I probably avoid.
Sure.
Unless my husband were with me or something, and I could hold onto his arm when they get to the.
And we should mention that there is, you know, again, there's not a whole lot of violence, but there's these characters live in a violent world.
And
they do, you know, talk. Language is a part of it, and so, you know, choice language is made again how these guys speak. But it is, at least it's not, you know, it's not over. What's the word I'm looking for? It's not egregious. It's not.
No, it's not overdone. It really is not as offending. I do know that I had tried another one of Pelecanos' books, and it was kind of like slapping me in the face every other word, and I was having a hard time with it. But once again, we're looking at those masculine figures. And it seems like that type of vocabulary is, in that type of lifestyle, is something that identifies them.
It's
as,
part of the deal.
So, but anyway, well, I got through it, and I really did enjoy it.
Yes.
After the everything was said and done, it was a wonderful, wonderful story.
Absolutely.
But,
you did feel closure. You know, the characters did kind of resolve themselves, and it came up to like a hopeful ending that all these horrible things that happened, men can kind of grow up and kind of and grow on and kind of heal those wounds that are gaping even from years and years down the
road. Yeah, they did come to some closure in certain... In many different ways.
Oh, yeah, this is not a... not everyone gets a happy ending. Certainly, Charles Baker certainly did not get a happy ending.
No,
this
he doesn't, but, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And this also reminded me, Greg, I'm at the age I lived through the 60s and the 70s and the riots. And I could never understand it even back then. And in my home, we were never taught anything but to respect one another. And I guess it just reminds me that even today we still have those issues that continue to resurface. And how can we actually make a difference? And so it was very, very heart-wrenching.
Absolutely.
At
just
certain points.
Oddly enough, as we record this podcast last night, the Central Library had a discussion with the George Zimmerman and the Trayvon Martin case.
Yes.
Which was well received, and again, as this the central action of this book is a racial, at its heart, a racial incident. It's one of those things that you know history really does repeat itself unless
it does.
unless we ask those questions, unless we engage with those issues, it's just going to keep on happening. So,
and I think we need to be aware of it because whether we're sensitive to it or not, there are those who are very sensitive to these types of racial differences that their guard is up even when we don't realize it. And so I think it was a good book. It really was.
It raised a lot of questions and like all good literature does, makes us look at things through another lens, through another point of view that maybe one that we're not always happy to identify or engage with in other areas of life. In fiction, we can. And so we can get into the characters' heads and see their point of view and see where they came from. And
even though it's no excuse for them.
Even though it is no excuse.
You can,
But Christine, I wanted to thank you for coming by and doing
this. Thanks, Greg. This has been fun.
Stepping out of your comfort zone and and reading something. And again, thank you for recommending our last book, The 13th of Bernard Cornwell. That was
and
a
thank
lot
you
of
for
fun.
This one. This one was very...
Absolutely.
Started out challenging, but I made it.
Well,
and
good. Hopefully the Archangels will make it too. And if you do read this, we will have a list of this and some of the other books that we've discussed as a Bibliocommons list that you'll find on our website as well. And if you have any questions, always feel free to call the library. We can recommend this and other good books for you. So,
yes, thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks again, Christine.